Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her Podcast. Welcome to the show in episode 502, Sweat Forming on My Forehead. That's a lot of talking. As we share the truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her M. What her M? What does that mean? Stay tuned. You're going to be hearing. This is going to be such a great show with someone I know so well. You will love her. Before we begin, please know that this episode is sponsored by Solaray Vitamins, Minerals, and Herbs. These are all rooted in nature. That's Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y. You know, they've got a special gift for women, the award-winning Her Life Stages products, supporting a woman all the way from her menstrual years, including PMS, all the way through perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause. It's an integrative, holistic approach, kind of having a woman's back throughout her life journey. To learn more about Her Life Stages by Solaray, run on over to your local health food store, to Whole Foods, to Sprouts, Amazon, and even Solaray.com. If you go to the website, please use promo code HER20 for 20% off. All right, now here's your first reminder to click on iTunes to rate and review today's show because we love your feedback. That's why. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about Her.
All right. Raise your hand if you knew what that M word was. You know what I'm talking about. How many times have I told you about that M word? First, it started with menstruation. Shh, don't say that word. And now Gen Z came through with the millennials and they said, we're going to say this loud and proud. All right. Then what happened? We've all fell off the cliff at the age of 40 into some dark abyss. And then we somehow reemerged at the age of 52 in menopause. What? What's going on here? It's time we talked about menopause, which includes perimenopause, and quite frankly, postmenopause too, while we're at it. All right. So who better to discuss this than Dr. Jessica Shepherd? Now, Dr. Jessica Shepherd actually has written a new book called Generation M. There's that M word again. Living Well in Perimenopause and Menopause. This just came out. She's a board-certified gynecologist and women's health expert who specializes in menopausal health and is the chief medical officer for HERS, H-E-R-S. And she has a holistic practice called Sanctum Med and Wellness in Dallas. You're going to hear a little Texas accent. I just know it. And it's created a place for patients to explore their holistic journey in optimizing health and has been featured in Self Magazine and Women's Health Magazine. Oh boy. And now we've got the book too. Jessica, welcome to the Her Podcast.
How are you, Pam? It is so good to see you.
Well, I'm reading the book and kind of getting into this whole thing and kind of loving it, actually. So what I always ask when you've written a book and you've taken the time to do this is why? Why did you write it?
I actually wrote this book because, one, in my practice, I see women in midlife. And so this is a very common theme of women who walk through my office day after day. But also for myself, going through perimenopause, I felt that this would be a great way, a love letter to all the women that I've seen, women in the community, for all the unknowns that we've had in the past, now moving into a space where we really honor perimenopause and menopause more. Still a lot of work to do, but at least we're getting there. And I felt that this would be the perfect way to symbolize this transition in life, where women felt seen and heard and not scared of approaching menopause.
I love that. And what I also love is, and as a fellow author, you know, what I really loved is that you've done what we all love to do. We take the liberty of just making up phrases. it's something I sort of love. And so you call perimenopause the pre-season. I think that that's fabulous. And then the main event and the after party are menopause and postmen. Well, you know, I identify with the party thing like immediately in the main event and the preseason. I think the words are absolutely fabulous. I'm writing my next book right now, so I'm going to be interviewing you for sure. And then you could sort of throw those terms at me so I can integrate them into the book as well, because I think it's really smart. So I think a lot of women don't know where they are. And you know that as well as I do. We're both physicians. You ask a woman, hey, are you in perimenopause? First, they're like, what's that? And number two, you know, they'll give you their age. I'm 47. I don't know where the hell I am. My menstrual cycles are wonky. I'm mentally crazy right now, and I don't know what's going on. So when you start the entire book out, which I thought was incredibly smart, you said, your roadmap, where are you now? Where are you going? Let's start with some really good definitions based upon your work. Let's start with that whole issue of perimenopause. When does it begin? What does it start looking like? How does a woman kind of know she's there?
Yeah, this is, like you said, that phase where it actually is more confusing than menopause, because menopause is very distinct. It's like, we know you've reached here, you've had 12 months without a cycle, you are now officially in menopause. Whereas perimenopause can start anywhere from maybe latter 30s, early 40s, mid 40s. And really what this time frame is that we're starting to see a dialing down of hormones approaching menopause. It's not just all of a sudden, you know, on Monday, you're perimenopausal, on Tuesday, you're menopausal. It can take a course of anywhere from, say, 3 years to even 10 years. So imagine, not from a clinician standpoint, not necessarily being able to pinpoint this is when it started. And that's what makes it so frustrating. And so women start to have these symptoms here and there and not quite sure. Their cycles are here and there. They'll not have a cycle for 3 months. Then it comes back full blown. It's heavier. It's lighter. They may have a hot flash or a night sweat here or there. And it's really hard for the clinician to tell, even from labs, if they're perimenopausal, because their hormones are still there. And so it's that fluctuation of the hormones that really dictates what this journey is going to look like. But it can start anywhere from latter 30s all the way up until the average age of menopause is 52. So it could last until 52. And some people have a shorter duration of that. But it really lends the conversation when women start to have these things that they're not piecing together, these symptoms, and not feeling their best, that that's when they should start the conversation, so that there can be some of this journey that's being tracked and trended and getting them the best care whenever they get to a point where they really do need attention.
I love that. I think a lot of women want to understand, like, is there a checklist? What do you look for? There's a, as you're obviously well aware, we both are, there's like a laundry list of things that are starting to go to hell. And so I know that the current research shows, and this is comes from a lot of the work from University of North Carolina, where they have a big perimenopause clinic, where they've actually seen that in terms of mood, which is so important, that anxiety starts picking up. So you feel more jittery. It also interferes with sleep and the rest of it. So quite frankly, you think you're going out of your mind. It's like, I thought I was kind of chill and all right. And then now I'm 45 and things are kind of looking a little fuzzy and weird for me. And I'm brittle and back and forth. Do you see that too?
Yeah. You know, even in my experience, it's this kind of subtlety of something's changing. And I would say, because I feel that I've embraced, not only personally, but really from an educational and a clinical standpoint, perimenopause and understanding where, how it can present, is to really actually pay attention to that mood perspective. Because here's what is, historically, when we look at that perimenopausal phase, or even in the menopause phase, so many women in the past were going through these changes of mood, anxiety, depression, and they were not being heard. And they were being told, it's all in your head. Or, hey, just take some antidepressants. And I think that that's why I want to make sure that we continue to have these conversations, because there are still women who are going through that and are being told, it's all in your head. And I want women to understand the real fundamental of what this perimenopausal journey looks like so that they can embrace it and they can journey through it in a way where they have full understanding and not feel crazy.
I think that that's incredibly important. And the other thing I think in terms of a major life lesson for women is you start learning that everything is intricately intertwined. So if you're stressed out, right, and you bring stress with you through the entire perimenopause and menopausal journey, my money's on the fact that every single symptom is going to be 50 times worse. It's a time to kind of like take a breath. Let's do an assessment. What's going on with your stress? Because you need to bring that under control. Because, I mean, can you imagine? Otherwise, you're looking at anxiety that gets 50 times worse.
Yep. And also think about the stage of most midlife women are usually that sandwich generation of probably taking care of older parents, maybe kids having left the house, or if you're a mom that was older when you had kids, that you're taking care of kids still in the house. In your career, you could be just maybe getting to a point where you're getting some acceleration, momentum. And so all of these different things are happening while the fundamental portion of neurotransmitters and hormones are fluctuating so much that there is a lot of turbulence going on. But if we don't know the reason why or the understanding why or actually the modalities to help us through those times and phases, I think that that's where we saw a lot of women kind of just like either giving up or just kind of numbing and not having a great transition in their life at all.
Women get an F minus in self-care. They'll take care of the dog down the street before they handle themselves. And they sometimes see self as a four-letter word. There's like a weirdness to it. I think the younger generations are getting a different message. And I think that they're a little bit more forceful about, you know, self-advocacy, et cetera. But, you know, women currently who are 40 and definitely 50 and over, they oftentimes struggle with that. So another stressor that takes place during perimenopause, menopause, is relationships. So you may be getting a divorce, you may be coupling, you may be messing around with friends, you may be geographically you moved and now you got to find a whole new host of friends, a new job, new coworkers. The relationship thing I think is very integral to a woman's journey and she takes it pretty seriously. So I think that that can be another huge stressor, to say the least. So what about the physical changes that are going on? Oh my goodness, I love that chapter 9, thin skin, thinner hair. Don't you be calling my hair thin. No.
There's so many changes that occur. And that, again, is something that else contributes to the stress. You know, there's change. A lot of women have thinning hair. Change in skin, like just the texture, the tone, but also change in our body habitus, right? So a lot of women complain of, I'm doing the same thing. I didn't change anything. I'm exercising the same. I haven't increased my eating. And they start to notice that their weight stays on. They're unable to take off weight. And also migration of how their body looks. A lot of times, you know, you wake up and you're like, where did this thing come that's on my abdomen? I did not invite it there, but somehow it showed up. And so all of those changes are due to decrease in hormones and how your body functions in response to that decrease in hormones. And that's why I usually like to really help women understand that there are estrogen and progesterone and testosterone receptors all over the body. I think we have typecast it to the pelvis where people think that's the only place they reside. That's the only thing they're in charge of is the ovaries and the uterus. I'm like, no, there's estrogen receptors in your brain, on your bone, on your heart muscle, on your fat cells. So when you have a decline in estrogen, you know, you start to see how the target organs start to react and respond to that. And that's namely why we start to see some of those changes.
So when I wrote one of my first books, I engaged in making things up, which I love to do. I just kept looking at that belly issue. And of course, with my background in fitness and nutrition, I had to address it. This actually was born one day when I was in my laboratory at the National Institutes of Health, and I heard a bunch of guys in the corner, these are more senior scientists, just sort of talking casually. We were dealing with people with Cushing's syndrome, and as you're well aware, people with Cushing's syndrome have way too much production of cortisol, which is stress hormone, and you get one hell of a belly out of this one. That's what I was studying, actually. But casually, several of them, you know, were mentioning, yeah, you know, these women are really picking up a belly, but that's kind of the way women look like when they're, you know, getting older. That's just normal. Now I'm like, well, wait a minute now. You can't just say that. And so I thought about it for a while, and then I looked at women in sure to form. There you are with that belly thing. And, you know, even if you're a master's athlete, you'll still pick up a little something, something. It'll only be like a couple pounds, 2 to 5 pounds, no more, you know, for someone who is aging into their 50s, 60s, who is ridiculously fit. That's normal. I'm on the board of the Senior Olympics, and I'm telling you right now, honey, it does not stop these people from breaking world records, having just a little jiggle there, okay? But that's not what's happening. For the average woman, it's more like 30 to 60 pounds. And of course, nowadays, you know, we have pretty draconian statistics about a woman's waistline, which is on average now about 38 inches for sure. So that being said, I just looked at it and I thought, and it's happening around menopause. So I made up a word. And actually, if you Google this, I'm now in the dictionary. I had no idea this happened. So I called it the menopot. And it just came out of my mouth one day when I was writing, and it just seemed to make some sense. And what's happening here is actually estrogen is terrifically potent in directing where fat is in the human body, in a woman's body, certainly. And you have a body composition redistribution that's taking place certainly by the mid 40s and then well into the 50s and beyond. So healthy lifestyle, clearly, I know you love that because you're into holistic and clean nutrition and really staying consistent with physical activity, which is my mantra. But you've got to have a solid foundation. And if you have that going into perimenopause, boy, does that make life easier, doesn't it?
It really does. And I think I always do start with it's never too late to start. But that's why I actually, you know, this book, Generation M, was so important to look at the perimenopausal phase because, again, starting earlier. So I think that that would be the key or the most important part for women is like starting earlier because then you're being preventative, right? I think that we really need to have started this conversation early. What I saw in clinical practice from the time that I was training, you know, in residency and early in my attending years is that we didn't have the modalities and the tools to help perimenopause. We focused on menopause and we understood when menopause happened, but we wouldn't utilize our tools until someone was in menopause, which if you think of the dialing down that we were talking about earlier, is that you have this fluctuation of hormones over the course of what, 3 to 10 years, but we weren't paying attention to it until it was rock bottom. There was nothing left. With any form of health, with any condition, it is always beneficial for the patient to be on top of it from a preventative standpoint and before you actually get to that empty tank. So that's how I like to approach it now is like, why would we wait until the tank is empty before we can start to build the foundation of nutrition, of exercise, changing diet, talking about hormone replacement therapy so that we can maximize and optimize what a person's life can look like once they reach menopause.
You know, it's so interesting. We do this with pregnancy.
Right.
So, you know, if someone's considering pregnancy, all of a sudden there's all this proactive, you got to do this and, you know, make sure you're already in great shape before you get into, you know, don't be obese and all the rest of it. And try already to have a very healthy lifestyle because obviously that'll translate for the child, et cetera. And then we get to the M word. And everything just falls out. Nobody talks about anything. So what I love about this book, you know, The M Generation, is that it's a heads up. It's never too early. And I think we're getting, the message is becoming stronger and stronger that you have absolutely got to start early. Start establishing those healthy lifestyles right now, because I'm telling you, girlfriends out there on the Her Podcast land, is going to make your life a whole lot easier. I can absolutely guarantee, you know, clearly I'm postmenopausal, so I've been through this whole thing, and I cannot tell you how fortunate I was that I was already doing the clean eating and fit thing just because of the work that I've been doing in my career all these years. So let's kind of flip over here for a second now. So you're an OBGYN and a menopause expert. So a woman is now all confused. She's like, are hormones going to help me with any of this? How do you approach that? I know this is like the loaded question. How do you approach this? And I understand it's not even HRT anymore, hormonal replacement therapy. It's, excuse me, menopausal hormonal therapy. How do you approach this whole thing as a woman sits down with you for the first time? Let's do the scenario. She is about 49, 50-ish. She's got the full fledge of, you know, she's got the brain fog. Energy level is gone. She is already experiencing a lot of the physical symptomatology, some hot flashes, nothing horrific, but not fun. Her sleep is not the world's greatest, et cetera, et cetera. How do you approach it now with her?
Yeah, first of all, I want her to understand what the phase is, and speaking to her about perimenopause and explaining what that decline in hormones is, everything that we talked about previous to this point, and that hormone receptors are all over the body. Then I really dial down of those symptoms that you just named, like which are the ones that really are impacting her life. And I prioritize those ones. And the reason is because if we start to just say we're going to knock out all the things on the list, I think that sometimes that can be overwhelming. This is something that is a marathon, not a sprint. And I want to make sure that we're able to figure out exactly what that pace would look like for this particular patient and how we can at least start to check things off the list rather than think that we're just going to go in there with a dry erase board and erase everything. Because at the end of the day, there has to be a buy-in from the patient, right, to continue whatever modality that they're going to use, because it has to become a part of their lifestyle. And the other thing is, I want to make sure that the things that are impacting them the most are prioritized so we can make sure that at least their quality of life can be maybe, for the most part, immediately improved because those things were so high on their list. And then we can start looking at some of those other things as well. I'm trying to get them to understand the pace of this, because unfortunately what we have done in medicine is that we have maybe told people that when you come in with this, I'm going to give you this, and by tomorrow you're going to feel great. And I don't think that's the right message. And we have to understand that our lifestyles impact how we feel and how our bodies respond. Also, our body does not turn over overnight. That needs to be the overwhelming message before we're just going to be like, you're here, we're going to give you all the hormones and everything is going to go away. And I want them to understand that there needs to be some relationship as well between me and them so that we can really get to each and every one of those symptoms over time. And it's not just going to be, I'm here for my annual or I'm here for my hormone checkup and then I'll see you next year. And we have to really create a consistency model before we're just going to go all in and just change it overnight.
So when a woman, she hears this, she loves it. You know, what you've also said, if I can kind of pile on that a little bit, one moment we're an 11-year-old girl, and the next moment we're having a menstrual cycle. It's like, well, wait a minute. And if a mother is on top of the situation, hopefully she's given her wonderful daughter a little bit of a heads up here, so it's not such a shock, but it's sort of like an overnight thing. I know I remember my very first period, and that was weird. So one moment I'm this, and then the next, and then you see the changes in your body. From you go from a string bean to more like an hourglass and all the rest of it. Okay, I get all that. But it seemed like pretty quick. Whereas what I see is more of a slow wean. And I think that's the part that is weird for so many women, because they kind of remember one moment I'm 11 and the next, you know, I'm an adolescent kind of thing. Then you've got this journey that just keeps going on year after year, and it's dynamic. It's not like here's your pill and knock yourself out or here's your patch or your potion or whatever we're going to do here. And that this continues for years, which is why having someone like you, a professional who's trained in this, to guide them and make sense of what's happening is, in my estimate, absolutely essential.
And there's also, like you said, a mental component to it. And I think women going through this perimenopausal phase, actually, for me, I am very much into how does the mind absorb this? What does it understand? How does it feel? So that emotional connect in the mind-body part of this is very important to me, because there is a mind-body shift. And my goal is for women to be in their body and understand what's going on and being able to embrace that. Because if we push away from it, then that's not the right approach either. We have to lean into it and feel the feelings of what we're going through so that we can be accepting of it and that we can embrace on this journey in a way that can serve us rather than repel us.
So if a woman then starts on some customized strategy with menopausal hormonal therapy, correct me if I'm wrong, she may not always be on that. She may actually have adjustments and back and forth, and how many hormones are we actually playing with, et cetera, et cetera. Explain that.
What we see is that, one, as you start to enter it, we're trying to identify which ones are the most important. So which hormone combination is going to work the best, whether that's estrogen or progesterone, whether that's testosterone only, whether it's all three. And then as we start, is it working? Is it actually working for the symptom that we're trying to resolve? So we may need adjustments in that. And the other thing is that as you're going through this perimenopausal phase, more than likely, because you're going now more towards a decline in estrogen and progesterone and testosterone, there may be other features that may arise over the years, and also maybe intensity may increase in some of those symptoms. And that just requires checking back in, readjusting some hormones, or maybe adding some that weren't there before. And then when we talk about if they need to stay on it forever, this is probably one of the maybe top three controversial things that we're hearing now with MHT-HRT treatment, because based on the WHI study, which was 20 years ago, is that there was kind of like a stop date, and it should be whether you stop at 60 or when whatever your age of menopause, your start age of menopause is 10 years after that. What we are leaning more towards now and seeing this in the literature, because if you think about it, your hormones, when we treat you with hormones, we're not giving you a medication. We are giving you back something that your body already had. So with that in mind, is this opportunity to continue hormone replacement therapy, even if your symptoms were relieved if we took you off. And that's now going more into the longevity space of what are the benefits of having hormones long-term. And you will find that with good recommendation or having a conversation with providers who are open to this longevity space and what hormones can provide, is that there are actually women and men who will stay on hormone therapy well into their 60s, 70s, and 80s because they feel better. And also it allows them to have kind of the body functioning at a higher level than if they weren't. That's a very nuanced conversation, because we don't have great data that shows that there's no risk, but we do have a lot of people who are staying on it longer, and that you have to really weigh that risk benefit for you individually and find out where you stand in that and decide if you'd like to stay on it past those timeframes that we just discussed.
What I think is really important from what you just said is that every woman out there needs to have a healthcare provider like yourself who will sit down and actually look at your unique situation and just take time to listen and then to formulate a strategy so that you understand that you need to check in. You need to also become more what I love to call introspective. And obviously that word, for all you out there in the Her Podcast land who just said, huh, what? That means introspective people are people who are tuned into their body. And you'll find this among athletes. An athlete knows their body like you have never. Like they know how that left ankle feels. They know how their mind feels. They know how their breathing is. You want to be more attuned to that, because what's happening is you're slowly but surely weaning off very, very powerful sex hormones, estrogen, of course, leading the way. And this is fraught with changes, mind and body, you know, basically brain and body. And so it's really important to now, here's another life lesson that comes from this whole journey. Learn to stay attuned to yourself. Don't externalize it. Like, Dr. Shepherd, tell me how I feel. No, you need to tell Dr. Shepherd how you feel. That means that you need to take a moment here and just kind of do a little bit of a study of all of your own biological changes, as it were. Like, whoops, I'm having a little bit of urinary incontinence. I need to share that with Dr. Shepherd. Maybe there's a little something we can do here. Or can I tolerate it? Or can I just learn to do certain pelvic exercises that will help me? And there's just all these options that kind of present themselves in a big way.
Oh, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm very big into embodiment and feeling how we feel, doing a self-analysis, a self-assessment, and then advocating for yourself in that way as well.
So you had a great chapter that I want to touch on because so many women go out of their minds, and that is your brain on menopause. So by the grace of heaven, I had very few symptoms. Don't hate me. I heard that. See, I heard you out there. But I just, you know, my mother didn't either. So, you know, I think that there's a big tie-in, like mother, like daughter kind of a situation. She didn't even remember when it happened. She sort of blew right through it because she was just busy living life and doing her thing. But one of the big manifestations for me was energy. Normally, you know me, Jessica, I have enough energy to light up, I don't know, a small city. And so I will feel if there's like less energy. And when I need a front end loader to get me out of bed in the morning, that's not good. The other piece was brain fog. So it was interesting. I wasn't so much the physical thing, the rest of my body. I was really kind of doing the brain thing in a big way. And I personally found estrogen to be absolutely transformative with regard to both of those. So talk to us about brain and menopause.
Yeah, your brain. And I love that this chapter was in there because it is very new when we think of literature, studies, etc. And Dr. Lisa Moscone, who also contributed to Generation M, who wrote, you know, The Menopause Brain this year as well. A lot of books came out this year, which were really impactful. Even from a neuroscientist perspective, that's something very new in their field as well, is really looking at the direct correlation with estrogen and how it impacts the female brain. One of those things that they were really able to look at were cognitive issues. And when we say cognitive, we mean like verbal learning, verbal memory, things that come with processing speed and attention and being able to multitask. And what they were able to clearly find is that there are changes in the brain due to the decrease in menopause, but also how that now impacts how we're able to show up cognitively. If we know this and we know that there's a decline in estrogen, that's another reason in why books like this need to be written, is because it doesn't always have to do with just hot flashes and night sweats. There's things that are improved upon, like even you just said, even symptomatically feeling better, but even from brain health and later on contributing to decreasing dementia. You know, when we think of bone health and decreasing risk for osteoporosis. So menopause is not just a hot flash and a pelvic issue. It really is a complete whole body transformation and change that we need to look at it more that way. And when we think of brain and the ability in that moment to show up as our best self, how we are able to have better cognition. The other part of that too is when we think of longevity is, what do I want to show up when I'm 70, 80, and 90? And I don't want dementia. And we know that now there's a direct link between estrogen levels and how they fluctuate drastically during the perimenopausal phase, and how that now can be an issue with cognition, but also in the future with dementia.
I love this. Let's step back for just a second. Jessica, did you ever think we'd be here today in the sense that we're actually saying the M word, we're having these discussions? Why do you think we're in a brand new place, that the paradigm is shifting from where menopause is seen as a urogenital issue. It's still, the ICD code still under urogenital diseases. Like, I'm not a disease. This is a natural process. So there's been that paradigm shift. And then we can actually talk about it now, that women's issues deserve lots of attention and research. You're now working as a chief medical officer with HERS. So here we have a platform that offers products to be able to help women through this. So why do you think we're here today? What happened?
I think that, one, I think when we look at the WA Giant and their retrospective analysis of the study and them realizing that there was so much benefit to hormone therapy, is that, one, from a clinical standpoint, it was only a matter of time before we started to say, hey, we need to really pay attention to what we do know is beneficial. But I also feel that this time in the day and age that we live, a lot of that is driven from consumers, women speaking up and, you know, poking the bear and saying, hey, what do we need to do this? And even from a level of technology and being kind of out of the box and pushing past the box of what we traditionally do in medicine is saying, hey, we're going to offer this to women because they are demanding it, and let's see where we go. And I think it was a catalyst of different things that kind of started the momentum, and now we're kind of rolling. And people being, you know, I think that there are a lot of women out there, whether they're a menopause advocate, whether they're a menopause clinician, who are being very loud and vocal about the need for us to pay attention to women in midlife.
Are you talking about Halle Berry again?
She's one of them. She's definitely one of them.
Well, you know, I mean, celebrities now are aging into this. Gwyneth Paltrow, and you can go right down the list, and they're loud and proud, and they want change. So they've been doing everything from advocating on Capitol Hill, like Halle Berry, to Gwyneth Paltrow with a $250 million business with Goop, as she's really showing what it looks like with herself and her own challenges. And then, you know, being able to say, well, you know, we deserve products. We deserve a platform to talk about this. So I think that that also helps. But there's something else, Jessica. You and me were women and we're physicians. So when I came through the system, when dinosaurs ruled the earth, I didn't have any female mentors. I had basically none. And I'm good. I'm good with guys. Not a problem. It's just that it got a little lonely out there. And so when I think about this, I really look at people like Vivian Pinn, who is one of my dearest friends, who was the first woman to lead the Office of Women's Research at the NIH when I was there with her. And she also led that women's health initiative, the WHI study, back in 2000. And when she was going through, there were three women in her class, including herself, at the University of Virginia. And that was it. He was like, all right, you know. And the reason why I bring that up is just using common sense, we're different in really important ways. You know, you can't duplicate what a woman is. And so we understand a lot of these needs and gaps in ways that are now manifesting in new research through the National Institutes of Health and others, as well as more and more young women who are inspired by you and me, who are now entering medical school. I mean, many medical school classes now are over 50% women, which kind of blows my mind. And I think it just changes kind of the tenor of what's going on.
And we are going to see the momentum both from women in the community, but also women physicians who are finally saying enough is enough. We need to do better, and really holding that charge and being accountable to what we can and should be doing when we think of midlife and any research in women's health. I mean, you could really run like a full scale of a woman's life, whether that's with adolescence, pregnancy, midlife, whatever it is, we really do need to pay more attention and put more research dollars into that.
Yeah, I remember when Bernadine Healy, the one and only woman to ever lead the NIH, came on board and she had that great one-liner, if you want a nickel or a dime or a penny from me at the National Institutes of Health to fund your research, if it's appropriate, obviously, you will include women because they were not included. There were grumblings about, but women have menstrual cycles. I used to love listening to that in my lab. I'm like, excuse me, raising hand, you know, quietly with all the Nobel laureates in the crowd. Mice and other animals that you're working with have estrous cycles as well. Somehow you made that work. And then there's like dead quiet, like, she may have a point here. It's like, no, people, please. Also, there was an issue about, you know, getting women to be participants because, and I quote, they have jobs and kids. That's messy. So you know what I did on one of my first protocols at the NIH? It was really simple. Oh my gosh, I had so many students in my lab. And I said, hey, one of the things you're going to be doing to get your little name on that paper that we're all working on, you're babysitting. That's right. And these students like, what? And I say, that's correct, because we need to bring women in on this particular protocol. They're probably going to have one or two kids in tow. That's fine. We're telling them to come on down because we're going to work around that. It's called adapt and adjust, because we are absolutely going to be representative of women in research. And that's just the way it is. Okay, can I get off my soapbox now?
Yeah, if you want to.
I know, seriously, I'll just hop right off, you know, big clump here, you know. Jessica, I could sit here and talk to you forever. You're such an inspiration for everything that you're doing. Thank you for that. And thank you for this book. Everyone out there, Generation M, remember that. Generation M, subtitle, Living Well in Perimenopause and Menopause by Jessica Shepherd, MD. And run on over to her website, then that's jessicashepherdmd.com, to learn more about her wonderful work, because I want all of us to be able to benefit from this. Jessica, what can I say? Thank you so much for being on the HER podcast. You now are going to become a repeat offender because we have now dubbed you as someone who has to keep coming back and making sense of this insanity of our life. Okay?
Love it. No more than that. It's awesome to be here with you again because we always have a good time.
Always, always, Jessica. Oh my gosh. All right. Now, people, run on over to iTunes to rate and review this terrific episode. We love your feedback. And another shout out to our sponsor, Solaray, S-O-L-A-R-A-Y. Ah, this is marvelous. Vitamins, minerals, and herbs rooted in nature and the HER Life Stage products. Get on over to Solaray.com and learn more. Once again, it's been another amazing HER podcast. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, your host, and I want to thank each and every one of you for listening in and being such an important part of our HER podcast community. Pop on over to drpeek.com to learn more about moi, my work, and all the rest of it. Join me every week for another HER podcast where you're going to hear from extraordinary, entertaining, and engaging thought leaders like Dr. Jessica Shepherd as we share our wit and wisdom for you to enjoy. Thanks so much. And remember that your time in this world may be limited, but the things you can do with that time are not. So get on out there, every one of you, and seize the day. Carpe diem, everyone. Have a great one.